Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Awesome Albert live.
January 24th of 06.
And you're welcome to join us on the program. We are the right-wing radicals who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. God made everything in six 24-hour days about 6,000 years ago. Dinosaurs lived with Adam and Eve. They did not live millions of years ago. And the evolution theory being taught in our schools is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Who on Earth came up with this idea that we all came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago, and the rock came from nothing? When nothing exploded 20 billion years ago, it produced everything. Satan has got to be laughing at folks for believing such a thing as that. Oh, well. Anyway, but if you want to call in and be on the program, tell them how they get a hold of us here, Albert.
They can call in at toll-free in the United States only, 877-479-DINO or 3466, extension 136, or 850-479-3466, or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, drdinolive@aol.com. And hopefully soon enough, we'll be doing email.
They're working on it now, actually. Be able to email stuff or instant message. You can instant message all day long, and it just sits there in queue, right?
Yeah, until
okay, but if you want it. Right, and then you check it. If you call our number, 877-479-DINO, extension 136, and leave a message. Did you ever learn how to check that?
Not yet. Still
it's, it's on the list?
Yeah. It's not the highest priority yet, though.
You've been working on that new home all day for the guys to move
yeah,
into.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, though. A lot of destruction.
You like destruction?
Oh, yeah.
Construction comes next, you know.
Yes.
Okay. Good. We got amazing staff here. Robert learned how to do electrical wiring today. Put him over there. And it's revolting and a little bit shocking experience, but he did great. Okay? So you can call and join us on the program, 877-479-DINO, extension 136. All right. Or you can instant message us, Dr. Dino Live, DRDINOLIVE. And soon, and very soon, you'll be able to do emails to us all day long. Okay, so before we get started here, by the way, we've not been able to find a building for boot camp. Everybody keeps asking, are you going to have boot camp again? I would love to, but no place to have it. About half the auditoriums within 50 miles of here are destroyed or still under construction from the hurricane, so we may have to postpone it to 2007, to skip a year. I hate it, but I don't know what else to do. Can't have it here. We can't have 800 people in this room, that's for sure. That'd be crowded.
Yeah.
That would. Who's on the phone there?
David from California.
David, California. Yes, sir, David. Go ahead.
Hi, how's it going?
Doing great.
I had a couple questions, and first a really quick question. Have you heard about Richard Dawkins' latest documentary?
No, huh?
Yeah, he has a new documentary, The Root of All Evil. I don't know, I thought that might be buzzing around in the whole...
No, what's he say about it?
Well, basically it's about faith and religion and it's about how he thinks it's a bad thing and all these other ideas, but I just thought there's a lot of evolution talk in the documentary, so I thought maybe you folks might have heard about it.
No, has he got something on the internet about it? Send me a link.
Well, not quite. It was broadcasted on TV, but there's a copy of it going on online. It's not really related. I was just curious if you heard about it or not. You know, if you had an opinion. But another question. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about free will and stuff, if that's okay.
Okay, sure.
Now, you believe that, you know, man has free will, and presumably that God has free will as well?
Yes.
So God has free will. And by free will, you mean, like, we have the ability to have, we have two options, and we have the equal opportunity to pick both, right?
We have the opportunity to pick whatever we want, and God does too, I suppose. Yes, I'm not sure where that's leading, but I would give that a qualified yes.
Okay. So does God have, now, presumably you believe also that God has unlimited power, all powerful, the whole...
Correct. Right.
Okay, let me just think about it for a second. So God can make a choice, right?
Right.
Can he decide not to do what he was going to do? Does that make sense?
Oh, any free moral agent can change their mind, or usually he does that depending on how our reaction is. He's already decided. Anybody that's broken his law once is going to hell, but if you will accept his payment that he provided, then you can be forgiven.
Well, what I mean is, like, so God knew, like, he was going to make the universe, and he also knew he was going to get mad about it, mad about Adam and Eve, right?
I don't know that he got mad. I think he knew what was going to happen.
When he flooded the earth, he said he was dissatisfied with, you know what I'm talking about, right?
He said he repented, which means change his mind.
Well, yeah. What I mean is, you know how the verse where it talks about God was, he's dissatisfied in his works? Something like that. I think it's Genesis 6:6. I think.
God saw everything. Let's see. I'd have to look up the wording, but
okay.
Tell me the point first, and I'll see if it's worth looking up.
Okay. Well, the whole point is that Adam and Eve disobeyed God, and so he got mad about it, or he was disappointed, or he was disappointed that sin had come to the world. A couple chapters down the road, he floods the earth, right?
Right. He knew ahead of time that was going to happen, but he allowed it to happen anyway because he already had a plan set in motion for redemption.
Yeah, and what I mean is, like, he knew, so before he made the universe, he knew he was going to make it, and he also knew that they were going to fall, and he also knew that he was going to flood the earth, right? Like,
right. He knows what's going to happen, forever, past, present, and future. He knows all that, right.
So if he knows he's going to make the universe, could he have done otherwise?
Oh, sure, he could have chosen not to make it. We would not know about it then. We wouldn't be having this discussion.
Yeah, what I mean is, if he knew he was going to, if God knows what he's going to do, can he choose to do something other than that?
Yes.
So if he knows for a fact he's going to do something, he knows he's not, how could that be? See? If you know what you're going to do, you can't do anything other than that, because then you wouldn't know it, right?
Well, I don't know. If I decide I'm going to the mall, I've got 400 different ways I can go to the mall.
What I mean is, if you know you're going to go to the mall, like if that's true, then there's no way that you can make something that's true false. So therefore, you can't change the fact that you're going to go to the mall.
But then I would have known ahead of time that I knew I was going to the mall, but I knew I was going to change my mind. I mean, you would have known it.
But then you wouldn't know you're going to go to the mall because you knew that already. You see?
I think it's playing word games, but...
No, not at all. Well, the whole idea is, if God knows what he's going to do, he can't do anything other than that.
If you say he can't do anything, then you just limited God, so you're not talking about God, whatever you're talking about.
But God has to have limits. You know that, right?
I don't know that there are any limits to God. If there are limits, then he's not God. What would limit him? And whatever limits him, that becomes God.
Okay, well, can God make atheism true? If there's no limits, then you should have the ability to make atheism true, right?
I think that would be a, can a number be greater than 3 and less than 5?
No, it's not.
Less than 2 at the same time. Yeah, it's an impossible construct you've created based on the rules of the universe. I guess God can do what he wants. Now, I'm just wondering, David, are these type of questions you're asking, are they sufficient to cause you to, accept the evolution idea that we all come from a rock?
Well, again, this has absolutely nothing to do with evolution. So.
Well, I know that you've called in many times, and you're looking for some way to justify believing you came from a rock.
No, not at all. No.
That's not it?
No, I'm not trying to justify. In either case.
But it sure seems that way to me. Like, you really would like to believe you came from a rock for whatever reason.
It has nothing to do with what I'd like. It has everything to do with what's true. In either case.
Right.
The whole idea is, if God knows that X is going to occur, he can't do anything about it because he knows it's going to happen. And if he changes that X is going to occur, then he didn't know that X is going to occur because it didn't. You see?
Well, yeah, you're off on one of those Colossians 2:8 type questions. Beware lest any man spoil you with your philosophy and vain deceit.
Oh, Hovind, that's not fair. That's what I'm talking about you don't need to be very bright to understand what I'm talking about.
I understand what you're talking about. I think you've created a I'm sure there's a term for it in logic, but I don't remember what it is. But
okay, if God knows all, if God knows the future, determinism is true. Determinism is true. And if determinism is true, I believe that determinism is true. But the whole idea is that if it's true, then all actions that occur, God can't do anything about it because he knew it was going to happen.
Hmm.
See? No, really, come on, Hovind. I know you're smart enough to understand.
I do understand. I'm trying to think through how to get you to understand that you can't create. It's like it's very much like me asking the question, can a number be greater than 5 and less than 3 at the same time?
No, it's not. It really isn't. And I've heard that an example that you're talking about, and it really isn't.
Well, how would you answer that question? Can a number be greater than 3 and less than 5?
Greater than
5 and less than 3 at the same time?
No.
No. So I've created an impossible construct.
And yeah, but what I'm talking about isn't. It's the answer is obvious that if God knows what's going to occur, then it doesn't make any sense to say that he can change it, because if he changes what's going to happen and what he knows is going to happen, then he didn't really change it because he knew he was going to change it, and therefore he didn't really do anything.
I understand.
Is your answer
to that dilemma then that there is no God?
Oh, well, that question itself doesn't. That's not what I use as a reason to hold disbelief, but
okay.
it shows that the idea is a little shaky, that's all.
The idea of God is shaky because of that? I would say the idea of mathematics is shaky because a number can't be greater than 5 and less than 3 at the same time. That shakes all of the foundation of mathematics.
No, it doesn't. It makes it consistent.
Oh, okay. Well, then I think it makes it consistent with God that he knows all the possible outcomes of all the possible scenarios, like a master chess player.
Yeah.
He knows 30 moves ahead, all the possible combinations, you know?
Well, I know, but he also knows which combinations will occur and which ones won't.
Sure, but he's chosen not to control it. He's allowed us to control it.
What I mean is if he knows which, let's say a chessboard, if he knows every move in the game, then he has no control. He can't make something true false, right?
I suppose he could.
Well, if he makes something that's true false, then it wasn't true, because he made it true false. I mean, it's really simple, you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean very clearly. I know what you mean, and I'm trying to think of the maybe somebody on the listening audience can help us. There's a term, a logical contradiction.
Okay,
maybe that's it.
In either case, what this implies is that every single action that occurs is in some way. There's nothing other. Okay, everything that happens, nothing other than what happened could have occurred. You see?
So it's all God's fault. When you do something wrong, it's his fault. When you lust, it's God's fault. When you cheat, it's God's fault. You're going to blame God for everything.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, God couldn't do anything about anything because he already knows. He knows everything in advance.
So God is impotent. There's some things he cannot do.
Yeah, I see.
See, you're trying very hard to bring God down to your level for whatever reason.
Your Bible is guilty of the same game because your Bible takes naps. He takes naps. He gets mad. He gets jealous. So, I mean, I would think that would be bringing him down to even more of an anthropomorphic level, right?
Well, then why do you even worry about him? Why do you bother calling in?
What was that?
Why do you even worry about God, and why are you bothering calling into my program?
Well, I don't worry about him because he doesn't. I don't think. I call in because I enjoy poking you with a stick.
I enjoy having you call in, David, and you can call anytime. Okay. I just Greg Bonson would be the guy to answer this, but we got a break now. But he died.
Do you at least see what I'm saying about?
I do. Yeah. Hey, we got a break. We can hang on if you'd like. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. Hang on.
I'll just call back another day. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, David. Bye bye. We'll be back, folks, right after the break. Good evening, folks. Welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Awesome Albert live.
January 24th, 06.
Oh, man, the month is flying by. Tempus fugit. You ever heard that one? That's Latin. Time flies.
Yeah, I think I've heard you mention that a couple times.
Okay, yeah, okay. Right. Let's see. There we go. You can call us in the program here, 877-479-DINO, extension 136, or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, and we got a bunch of them here. Here we go. Answers to the last caller. Several folks called in and said, can God create a rock he can't lift? He's taking the infinite God and trying to comprehend him with a human brain. Good point. If the infinite God would fit in somebody's 3-pound brain, he would not be worth worshiping. That's for sure. Okay. Archangel Boy 79 writes in, I agree with you. This caller doesn't understand that he's asking for a circular triangle. Okay. All right. ATT0111, hi. Always does that. That's good. I have a Bible-related question. Where can we find the concept of eternal sin and the need for an eternal redeemer in the Old Testament scripture? Eternal sin. I guess by pure logic, if God is eternal, if God is infinite, if he is perfect, then any disagreement, any breaking of his rules, any violation would merit eternal punishment. And of course, we have all broken his rules millions of times. So, yeah, any one sin makes us absolutely worthy of eternal punishment. I was watching the History Channel about 6 months ago, and they had a story on there about some guy who counterfeited the king's money. Okay? He worked for the king, and he cheated the king out of whatever, you know, a bunch of money. And, oh, the punishment that guy got was unbelievable. I mean, they hung him up outside the city wall, you know, by hooks to his, you know, collarbones. And I don't know. It was quite a message to everybody else, you know. I'm king. Don't do that, you know. The guy hung there and screaming for days and finally died. I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's the fact. Okay, the eternal king would have the right to do whatever he chooses, I suppose.
I bet too many people didn't try to steal from the king after that.
No, they didn't do that anymore. Okay. Well, the Romans, you know, public crucifixion gets a message. Daddy walks by with, you know, his little boy. See that guy hanging on the nails, with the nails right there through his arm? He's screaming. His blood's dripping out, you know. Don't do what he did. Okay, Daddy, what did he do? Okay.
Well, except for one guy. Do it.
Right, yeah, you can do what he did. Okay. So in the Old Testament, where can you find that eternal sin, need of an eternal redeemer? My field of expertise is more on creation evolution, so that is more of a theological question. I guess, though I like theology and read the Bible all the time, I guess you'd probably have to get a theology book. I have several here in the library, but they've been moved around, so I'm not sure I can find it quickly. The concept of eternal redemption is certainly in the Old Testament, but I can't think right now of where. Sorry about that. The first, of course, mention of the Redeemer is Genesis 3:15, you know, about he shall bruise the seed of the woman, you know, is going to bruise the head of the serpent. I don't know. I'll have to pass on that one. I'm sorry. I can't come up with an answer now. I'll think about it. Maybe during next break I can go look in the theology book. Okay, Skyworker 49286. I was just sent this link by a friend, undecided on creation-evolution debate. MSNBC.MSN.com/ID, apparently for intelligent design, / 10994885, if you want to look it up. Here we go. Article says from MSNBC, chimps more like humans than apes. DNA analysis also shows they're evolving faster than humans. Oh. Chimps are evolving faster than humans. Now, what would that mean? Since humans aren't evolving at all, chimps are evolving faster than zero. That could still be zero, I suppose. Oh, we'll read the article. Give them a chance to defend themselves. Okay. Robert Roy Britt writes in from Live Science. Oh, MSNBC is hooked into Live Science now. Okay, good. While you might think of yourself as smarter than the average ape, beware. Those distant relatives of ours have a knack for evolving more quickly than we do. And by revealing this through DNA analysis, scientists have provided support for a controversial hypothesis that chimpanzees are more closely related to humans than to other species of great apes with which they're currently classified. The findings were announced today in a study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Researchers generally agree that humans and chimps diverged from a common ancestor about 5 million to 7 million years ago. Chimps are lumped with gorillas and orangutans in the same family, Pongidae, where humans are in the family Hominidae. But a study in 2003 found that 99.4% of important DNA sites are the same in chimps and humans. Wait. Who is making this decision which sites are important? Because you can see right away they're going to say, well, that site doesn't line up, and therefore that site's not important. I could say, all important people believe in creation. Right?
Yeah.
Sure. When, by definition, that's right. I've decided, if you don't believe in creation, you're not important, so therefore all important people believe in creation. Duh. Okay. There we go. I'd like to read the article here. I will. Other researchers have since concluded that there are crucial differences in the genetic software of the two species. However, only a few months ago was the full chimp DNA sequence unraveled. Now think about this, Albert. Here it is, 2006.
January 24th.
Yeah, thank you. A few months ago, they finally unraveled the chimp DNA. And yet, for years, they've been saying we're related to chimps because of our DNA. How did they know before they unraveled the DNA? They must have been making up a story. Since they just finished unraveling the DNA, right?
Yeah.
So they couldn't have known years ago, since it would just happen. I mean, they really have a logical problem here to consider. How did they know before they did all this? Okay, well, let's see. Chimps evolving faster. In the new study, scientists examine how quickly each species evolves. I would like to see how on earth you could study how fast something evolves. You'd have all kinds of assumptions built into a study like that. All kinds of fundamental assumptions. Okay, let's go on here. The figure they work with is called a molecular clock. It involves the rate at which DNA base pairs match up incorrectly, causing genetic errors called substitutions. These are the mutations that cause changes in a species over time. Okay, if there are mutations and substitutions and genetic errors, and they're coming into the chimp DNA faster than they're coming into human DNA, now stop and think. Could it be that there have been, for most of human history, less pressures on the chimps as far as environmental stresses to cause any mutation? Humans have been living in, you know, around factories and society and causing all kinds of genetic damage for a long time. Could it be that if they're seeing chimp DNA, you know, mutate faster than human DNA, that it has nothing to do with evolution? Is that a possibility they're willing to even consider, I wonder? Okay, well, let's just go on here. Our clock, it says here, our clock began to slow down about a million years ago, and today it is 3% slower than that of the chimp and 11% slower than in the gorillas. Can't you see a million assumptions built into this? Who's making these judgment calls? I want to meet the guy, and I want to understand this study thoroughly before I'm going to buy into that one. Concludes the study led by Sojun Yi, a biologist at the Georgia Institute of Technology. Okay. Tell Sojun that I will come to Georgia Institute of Technology and have a debate with the entire faculty, half my brain tied behind my back. I think I could point out to anybody of average intelligence that there are all kinds of assumptions built into what he's trying to say here. Okay, the upshot, the article says, continuing, quoting here from MSNBC.com, if you just joined us, I'm sorry, MSNBC.MSN.com. ID, a couple of chimpanzees on the front. The upshot, there seems to be fewer changes in the software of life in humans over time than in chimpanzees, and even fewer still than in other apes. Now, guys, they just finished sequencing the chimp DNA. How would they know? They just finished a few months ago. And now they're telling me... They have got to be kidding. Do they think people are going to buy this? All right. We'll be back right after the break, folks. Join us on the other side at Dr. Dino Live. Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Awesome Albert live.
January 24th, 06.
And you can join us on the program here. We're the folks who believe the Bible is true and the evolution theory is dumb, extremely dumb. And if you believe you came from a rock, we're here to help you. Okay, I know it sounds like we're making fun of you, and we're trying awfully hard not to, but, you know, it is pretty dumb. It's so fun to make fun of, because it is really a dumb idea, but that's okay. We're trying to be nice, and we want to help you. So you can join us on the program, 877-479-DINO, extension 136, or instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. I did not. I'm sorry. Let's see, who answers the question? About Bible-related question. Oh, ATT. I did not find my theology book during the break. I have to get Leah in here and say, hey, where did you put it? But anyway, the question is answerable, but I don't remember what it is. Okay. I remember we talked about that 32 years ago when I was in college. But I was working 40 hours a week and taking a 20-hour load in college.
Wow.
Sleeping 3 or 4 hours a night. I didn't really remember everything they taught me in college. Okay? Worked my way through. Okay, we're reading the article sent to us here about humans and chimps and apes are all related and we all, you know, went to school together. Here we go. From msnbc.msn.com/ID, intelligent design, /10994885. Okay. And the article says, the slower clock correlates with a longer time needed to reach sexual maturity, almost twice as long for humans as gorillas. Scientists call this generation time. In order for mutations to cause lasting change in species, they must pass on to the next generation. Duh, I agree. Since well before modern times, humans have taken almost twice as long to reach sexual maturity as other apes, Yi said. Now, how on earth does he know that?
I don't know.
Yi, pay attention. Man, how on earth could you know such a thing? See, he starts off with the assumption evolution is true. And everything we've been teaching about evolution for all these years, that's true also. I mean, obviously, starts with an assumption. Okay, he says, I'm quoting here, a long generation time is an important trait that separates humans from their evolutionary relatives. Now, there's an assumption built into that one. He assumes they're evolutionary relatives. I say, yeah, I disagree. That's a different guy talking here. This is Navin Elagno, a graduate student working with Yi. We used to think that apes shared one generation time, but that's not true. There's a lot more variation. I think we can say that this study provides further support for the hypothesis that humans and chimpanzees should be in one genus rather than two separate different genuses. Because we not only share extremely similar genomes, we share similar generation time, Yi said. Yi, I won't get into it on the air here, but you need to study the chimpanzees' sex life, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it. Nothing similar to humans, okay? Nothing. Okay. He says, humans are slow but smart. Mm-hmm. Given our evolutionary snail's pace, you might be wondering why in just a few million years we got so smart while chimps lagged. Doesn't that assume evolution happened? The whole thing is assumptions built into all of this. I mean, I can see this in a court of law. The opposing attorney, objection, speculation, the judge can say, sustain. That's correct. It's all speculation, ye. Let me read the last two paragraphs here if I can stomach any more of this. He says, even though mutations per se may arise in fewer numbers in humans than in chimpanzees, those that matter will quickly spread, Yi told Live Science. Mutations that are advantageous to the human, such as intelligence, probably are under strong natural selection. No, I disagree. I've seen some extremely dumb people out there, Albert. They're making it.
Yeah, so have I.
They're surviving. I taught school 15 years. I had some. You wonder, how on earth did this kid, how does he breathe and walk at the same time? You know, man, oh man. He's a few fries short of a Happy Meal. Boy. Okay, so he says, mutations that are advantageous to the human, such as intelligence, probably are under strong natural selection. I think a quick look around the street at downtown New York would show you this is not correct, Yi. Just walk around and talk to some people. Meaning individuals either latch on to the good stuff or perish. Take a look at the possum. Talk about dumb and still thriving and expanding their field. Possums are taking over the world. Got to be one of the dumbest critters on the planet.
They really are.
We killed one out here the other night, you know, the big old possum. You know, you walk right up to them, and they're looking at you.
they play dead.
Yeah. So I reach up with my foot, and I just, you know, poke him just a little with my foot, and they roll over. Of course, he's still hissing at you. Got his one eye open, but one eye's closed. He's trying to pretend like he's dead, you know. We're going to not pretend nothing. He's going to be dead here in a second. Okay. However, Yi and her colleagues looked only at mutations in non-functional regions of DNA, changes that don't affect evolution. If we looked only at we looked at only those mutations that are selected, it's possible we may see different results, she said. Look at this. At the end, they finally admit they only looked at a part, and it's only recently been analyzed, the whole DNA, and we might get different results if we looked at the whole thing, but look at the start article, title of the article is, Chimps More Like Humans Than Apes. They start off with this dogmatic statement. Oh, see, we've proven it, you know. And then you read the article. They haven't proven nothing. Oh, brother. Albert, they need us out there.
Okay. Oh, I know.
All right. Okay, next question. I just clicked the button and it opened up again. I don't want to see the three chimpanzees. Here we go. Dr. Hovind, concerning the caller talking about God being limited because he knows everything, I would say that he is trying to fit God's understanding of existence into the limited corporal mechanics of a linear universe. He seems to forget that God is outside of his creation and that even includes space-time, which we have only a limited understanding of. God makes space-time, for crying out loud. I'm sure there are concepts that he has full knowledge of that our minds can't even calculate. Good point. Yep, very good point. Okay. Duke, that was from GHST32, Ghost 32. Here we go. Duke Guru 716 writes in, you said the sun is shrinking at a rate of 5 feet per hour and that the moon is drifting away at 3 inches per year. How do you know that both of these rates weren't extremely small and grown at an exponential rate in recent years? Well, that's a good, fair question. Let's take the sun. All we have for the sun, two things. We have common sense observations. You step out, look outside, it's burning. Any arguments about that?
No, I'm not arguing.
Okay, the sun is burning. We can all agree. If you disagree, let me know. Raise your hand, okay? So, the sun is burning. The question is, why is it burning? What's causing it to burn? Where's this fuel coming from? It's, by all the known theories that I'm aware of how the sun burns, basically they fall into two categories. There is fusion, and there is gravitational collapse. And there is legitimate arguments about that, and I don't know which is correct, okay? It doesn't matter to me. Either way, it's burning. It's burning. Look at it, okay? Go outside and feel it. Well, not if you're up north, you can't feel it, but not here, you can feel it. It gets warm. So, it's just common sense. The sun is burning. So, it's burning up in a certain amount of fuel. And all kinds of studies have been done on the sun over the last 300 or 400 years of our modern science, resurgence in information based on science, which they probably lost 2,000, 3,000 years ago. But it says the sun's burning, it's using up fuel, and based on all kinds of observations, the sun is losing about 5 million tons a second.
Really?
It's quite a weight loss program.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the sun's huge. Nothing to worry about, okay? It's going to be there a long time. Now, if the Earth lost 5 million tons a second, it would be pretty noticeable pretty quickly, you know? But the Earth weighs about 76 trillion tons, I think, is the number. It's
how
a lot.
How do you weigh something like that?
Well, you weigh a little piece of it, and then you calculate, you know, the rest. Actually, technically, it would weigh nothing because it would have a mass, but then it wouldn't be in tons. Never mind. Okay, it gets too complicated.
Okay.
it's like weighing a big rock. You know, let's break off a little piece, weigh it, calculate the volume of it, and then estimate based on the volume of the whole thing. Okay?
Okay. Let me take your word for it.
Okay, good. How do we get off on all that? Okay, the sun. The sun is all the other thing we have besides common sense, you know, looking at it and common sense deduction, is we have observation from the Royal Greenwich Observatory, a Royal Observatory in Greenwich, England, and the Naval Academy, I believe, did observations. Since about 1836, they have been taking measurements of the diameter of the sun, both equatorial diameter and polar diameter, and the fact is it is shrinking. It's observed. Now, it does swell and contract and swell and contract like a marshmallow on a fire, you know. It'll swell up, and the sun is oscillating. Okay, that's true. Some of that may be because the sun goes around the Earth in an oval shape. There are times when it's a little bit closer. So if you don't allow for that, I mean, it's a million miles closer, 1%, okay? That's going to, you know, affect, it's going to look a little bigger if it's closer. And when it's further away at perigee and apogee, that'll make a difference. Who cares? Well, If all that was taken into account, and I don't know that it was with the observations, but I would assume it was. I mean, they've known for a long time the sun goes in an oval around the earth since Isaac Newton. So I would assume they took that into consideration at the Royal Observatory. And so they measured the diameter of the sun, and they said, hey, guys, it is shrinking. All of the math on this is found on creationscience.com. That is Walt Brown's website. So I would suggest you check that out. As far as what would change the rate, would we say there was something happened in the past to cause this rate to change, like the moon moving away? Okay. Well, we know the moon is moving away, and we know approximately the rate it's moving away. What could possibly change that? I don't know. I mean, if you come up with a suggestion of what could change it, I think also, Duke Guru here, you got to consider the evolutionists like to extrapolate all the time. They say, oh, look at carbon dating decay or potassium argon or, you know, uranium lead, whatever. And they look at these decay rates that they watch for 3 days in the laboratory and they extrapolate it over billions of years. And they're perfectly content and happy to do that. Okay? But yet when you do the very same thing with something that would tend to go against their theory, like, you know, the Earth is not billions of years old, now they're up in arms. Whoa, wait, you can't do that. You're extrapolating. Okay, what did you just do? You know? Like this article about MSNBC about the extrapolation based upon genetic mutations in the chain rate. Well, that's an extrapolation. It's a guess. We know of some things, you know, certain extrapolations are logical because we don't know of anything that could interfere with it, okay? Nothing could change this rate. I don't know. If you have a suggestion of what could change the rate of the moon moving away or the sun burning, let me know because I don't think anybody's ever come up with those. Okay, Little Italy, 32,000. Writes in, are you ever going to debate Stephen Hawking? I tried, okay, Little Italy. I called, got a hold of his secretary. I would say, who called first? My secretary called because I was going over to England. We wanted to offer to debate the guy, okay? And he hung up on my secretary, and then I called back and said, hey, wait, what are you doing? You know, can we talk? You know, no, she hung up on me. We said, name your price. How much money do you want? You know, I'll come debate him. So, you call him. Try to set it up. I'm going back to England. I don't know. Been there three times, I think. I don't know. But I'll go back. I'll fly all the way over the pond just to debate him. Be worth it. Very smart guy. But blinded into thinking he came from a rock. And we want to help him. That's all I want to do is help him. I want to help everybody. I don't want to see anybody go to hell. I want to help them. Okay. Dr. Oven, Marsupial03 writes in, here is an article, MSNBC.com/ID. What is this one about here? Monkey See, Monkey Do. Okay, by Jonathan Alter from Newsweek magazine. And the article says, offering ID as an alternative to evolution is a cruel joke. It walks and talks like science, but in the lab performs worse than medieval alchemy. Sounds like this guy's open-minded. August 15th, 05 issue, a teacher in Kansas, where war over Darwin in the schools is still raging, calls the theory of intelligent design creationism in a cheap tuxedo. Great line, but unfair to the elegant tailoring of the Discovery Institute, the Seattle-based think tank that has almost single-handedly put intelligent design on the map. 80 years after the Scopes monkey trial, the threat to science and reason comes less from fundamentalists. Oh, stop right there. I can't let this one go by. The threat to science and reason? Jonathan Alter. Jonathan, there's a threat to the evolution theory because people are getting sick and tired of this religion masquerading as science. I'm not aware of any threat to science. Science is the accumulation of facts, things that we know based upon observation, experimentation, testing. If you think there's something we know about evolution, I would like to hear about it. Name me one thing you know, K-N-O-W, know about evolution. Just name once. One. There is nothing anybody listening to this program today, or anybody not listening to the program, that would include pretty near everybody, wouldn't it? Pretty much get them all. There is nothing any human on the planet knows about evolution. They think, they dream, they hope, you know, they have all kinds of theories. There is not one thing anybody knows about evolution, because it doesn't happen. It's not even a good theory. It's nothing but a religion. So he says, the threat to science and reason. No, it's no threat to reason. Bible says in Isaiah 1:18, come now, let us reason together, saith the Lord. God's reasonable. It is perfectly reasonable and logical to believe there must have been a designer to this universe. Perfectly logical. So, there's no threat to science and reason coming less from fundamentalists who believe the earth was created in 6 days than from sophisticated branding experts and Ptolemaic PhDs who are clever enough to refrain from referring to God or even the Creator and have now found a willing tool in the President of the United States. Let me read the rest of the article here. Lest you think this is merely an academic interest of academic, consider the stakes. The Pentagon last week revealed that it is spending money to train certain scientists how to write screenplays for thrillers related to their specialties. Why? Because the status of science has sunk so low that the government needs these disciplines to become sexy again among students, or the brain drain will threaten national security. Oh, here's the chicken little sky is falling part. Jonathan, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. No, the sky is not falling. We're doing fine. And the brain drain is because of evolution, not because of a lack of teaching evolution. It's because they're wasting time on a dumb theory. Okay, we'll stop right there. Who's on the phone there, Albert?
We have Kurt from Billings, Montana.
Billings. I bet it's chilly in Billings today, huh, Kurt?
Oh, it's not too bad here. It's actually pretty nice.
Well, good. How can we help?
Yeah. I'm the one that's normally from Tucson, still up here in Billings, but... Yeah, I just heard you say you were going to debate Stephen Hawking. You see the one with the disorder that it makes him crippled?
Well, there's Stephen Hawking and Stephen... There's Dawkins and Hawking.
Which one is the one that
has that
paralysis?
Hawking is the one with the paralysis, I believe. You're right. Dawkins is the one we tried to debate.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's why I had to clarify that. I didn't know if you... I didn't think that he would be up for a debate.
It'd take a long time to debate.
Maybe that's why I figured they hung up on you. Okay, you just misspoke then.
Okay, Dawkins. Yeah, I got him confused. Okay.
Okay. Right. I'm always intrigued by ministries like yours, at least the way they're run by you, the way they run like you as far as financially.
Sure.
As opposed to organizations that beg and all that. You've always had a statement in your ministry that you never were going to send out a letter begging for money, is that right?
Well, yeah. Hang on, we got a break here. We'll be back in about a minute. Let's discuss that. We'll be right back. All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Awesome Albert live at the switchboard over there. What's the date?
January 24th, 06.
06. We got to get him a line. You're going to give you another line here one of these days, too. You're going to have two things to say.
You've been doing extension 136 occasionally.
Have you? Okay, yeah. Go ahead and tell him how to get us, Albert.
Okay, you can call us toll-free 877-479-DINO or 3466 in the U.S. only. Or you can call us for outside the U.S. 850-479-DINO. Extension 136, or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive at AOL.com.
And pretty soon we're going to have to add an email address on there.
Yeah.
That's going to be really confusing. Anyway, we have Kurt on the phone from Billings, Montana, asking about finances of the ministry. Go ahead, Kurt.
Okay. You've never begged for money?
I wouldn't say that. I promised the Lord when I started this ministry 17 years ago. I said, Lord, there are some things about Christians and Christian ministries I don't like. so I don't want people to be able to, I want people to be able to copy my stuff. If I produce anything, for years we didn't copyright it. Now we copyright it with the condition that they don't alter it. So just for our protection. You can still copy our stuff for free. Okay?
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not going to send out a monthly letter begging for money. And we have never had a monthly newsletter. There have been times when I say, hey, here's our needs. You know, if you want to help, fine. But... I think you'd have to define some terms there. Begging, no, I don't think so. But yeah, I let other people know about our needs once in a while, and say, hey, here's what we're working toward a project, and if we don't get enough money, we don't buy it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I guess that's where the line may be drawn, as far as whether or not ministries should even ask for money. Because have you heard of George Mueller before? He had a condition with his ministry that he never begged for money. He always let God provide, you know, provisionally through other people who may have known through what he was doing, or maybe God spoke to the person to give him money. But he never had any problems getting money when he needed it. Mm-hmm. He never asked for it either. So, yeah, and I just brought that up because I know your ministry is pretty, as far as most of the other ones that are out there, is really, you know, if everybody modeled them based upon what you do, it would be a better thing to do. But what about some of these, and I always bring up the Bible Answer Man because I really don't care for the guy too much. He begs for money all the time on the air, and that is, I remember reading, I think it was from the Charlotte newspaper, he's investing in a golf course out there, and, you know, he spends it in ways that I don't think, that if donors knew about what he was doing with the money, that they probably wouldn't give him money. And I know probably a lot of other ones are like that, too. I looked on some of the nonprofit organization watches, and you can check a lot of the CEO's salaries, and a lot of them are pretty substantial, you know, way up in the $300,000 range.
That's what I heard. So, I heard Hank Hanegraaff's is $250,000 a year, plus his wife. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but that's what. And then
a
couple weeks ago, somebody sent me an email and said, "Hey, Brother Hovind, did you know Hank Hanegraaff just talked about you on the program?" And said, "Oh, with Hovind, it's all about the money."
Yeah.
Oh,
I remember,
man.
I think I remember hearing that. I think I might have even told you about it. But, yeah, he's... But the thing is, I don't know if there's any other organizations out there other than the EFCA, unless maybe you're aware of some that can require the information to be out there for the public to see where their money is actually going. I know the EFCA don't really keep up with a whole lot of that. Do you know of any ones that might?
I don't know. First of all, I don't know of any others, and I'm not sure that we want. I mean, it sounds awful, but I don't know that we want the government regulating church ministries like that. You know, to me, that's Pandora's box. I mean, you should see where the Catholic money goes. I mean, they own what they used to own over half of Coca-Cola. Richest organization on earth. You know. So
that's right, and that's if people are in the dark about where their money's going, then they probably wouldn't give to the organization. So there's nothing, I don't think there would be anything, that would be causing any type of government church separation or whatever people are worried about with that happening or losing any freedoms. That's just letting everybody know where their money's actually going. That would be all it would be. Because I know there's a lot of, if I knew where a lot of money was going in, if a ministry was asking for my money and then it was going to the CEO's golf course salary or whatever it was, I wouldn't give to the organization. But most people don't know, and they are not aware of where to look to see what the, you know, information is. And if it's not out there, they can get away with whatever they want to do. And that's usually what happens. That's what happens when it, you know, when they say, yeah, we got to exist because we have to, let people know that Jesus is here. They're gonna, you're gonna go to hell if you don't hear about him, and that's the pretense that they use.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is sad that so many Christian ministries have absolutely abused, which is why when I started this ministry, I said, "Lord, there are some things about your children I don't like." And he said, "Me too, son. What else, So that's why we set a couple simple policies. I wouldn't copyright my stuff. I wouldn't charge for seminars. I don't charge anything when I go to churches. I tell the pastor, I would like you to pay my expenses, buy me a ticket, give me a place to sleep and food, and take a love offering. Sometimes their love offerings are pretty good. Sometimes they are really bad. But I get it at the end. I don't even look at it. I say, thank you, brother. God bless you. If you want me back, give me a call. And I come home, hand the whole bag to the secretary, and they post it. And when people do give big gifts to the ministry here, I don't know about it. I don't want to know. I don't want to be, play favorites.
Does that happen on a regular basis where people give you just a big chunk of money when you buy
more? Not very often.
Oh, yeah?
We had
so you make most of your money is from the things that you sell then?
The tape sales and the website, stuff like that, right. Yeah, and I go out every week preaching, and sell tapes at the table there and tell folks, look, if you can take it home, copy it, send it back, get your money back.
Right.
I mean, I don't know any other ministry does that. If you find one, let me know.
Yeah, and I guess the flip side to all this is where it says in the Bible, forgive if you, since you were given freely, freely give, right?
Sure.
And so where would that line be drawn then for ministries to just give away free information? Maybe then if they made their money through donations and they had to let people know about their needs, then
well,
I can see in that respect possibly, and it would be okay to ask for money if they gave everything away free. But, you know, that's the thing, is if they run like yours is kind of run like a business, sort of an ethical business from what I can see. And
we give away a lot of stuff. I mean, any prison chaplain that writes us a letter, we send them a free set of tapes. We send out, I would guess between $60,000 and $80,000 worth of tapes we've given to prisons. Also to missionaries, we give any missionary that comes here. Just yesterday, we gave $300 worth of stuff to a missionary to take it over to Ukraine, or to Russia. He's going over there.
You guys, how much money do you think you've lost by giving things away?
Millions. Absolutely millions. By allowing people to copy stuff, if we had copyrighted it and said, oh, you have to get it from us, like some ministries do, we'd be millionaires. That's not the goal, though. The goal is to win the war, not build the castle.
Yeah. I disagree with you on your creation evolution stuff, but I like the way you do your ministry. But
well, if you keep studying, you'll even agree with me on the creation stuff.
In fact, I've been for quite a while since I've heard you, and I've actually keep going further and further away, at least from the creation part. But
all right.
But and I don't think that's the most important thing anyway. I think that the way you run your organization is probably a better witness.
Why don't you come visit? Come visit. I live right here on property. I have 7 offices in my house. I used to have 10.
Yeah.
There's never been a time when I didn't have right in my house. I don't even have a house, okay? We use my car. I don't have a car, but the church and the ministry van here for all kinds of trips. I don't own a thing. I don't own a sock.
You don't drive around in a Lexus or a Mercedes or anything.
Well, it's a 2000 Chevy van with 120,000 miles on it. It's at the shop right now. I told the dealer, can you please figure out how to make this thing run? Okay. I do have a nice moped, though.
Right.
My Suzuki 650 moped that the staff got for me is really, it'll go 120 mile an hour. I mean, it's a scooter. And it's phenomenal. 650 Bergman, 2003 model. That's the newest thing I've ever had in my life.
Right.
I've never had a new car ever. I've had 127 cars and 80-some motorcycles over my lifetime. Always get a clunker, fix it up. What year's yours, Albert? Your buggy you got?
A 93.
93, okay,
yeah.
There we go. I don't know if anybody on our staff has a new car. I mean, I don't care if they get one, but I've never got one. I'm not against it. I just have never done it, you know?
Right, yeah.
I worked at General Motors. I saw them go together. I said, man, how do these things run? Well, keep studying, and when you get done, you climb in the mountain of truth, you can be a Baptist and be, you know.
Oh, I was a Baptist. I was born that way. So
yeah, slid
down. I don't think I'll be going back. But
okay.
All right.
Any questions about our finances? I mean, we're an open book here. I mean, I don't.
Oh, okay.
Nothing to
hide. I did a little bit of research on this, and I'm gonna. That's why I kind of asked you about a few things about what you thought about some of those. You know, whether or not people should ask for money or not, or depending on also how they spend it. You know, but so. You know, I cannot stand the violence man just by listening to him. He's just a propaganda man is what I think of him as. I think he's afraid. I don't think he would debate anybody, because if he did, his theology would just fall apart. But
I've never met him. I've heard a couple of his programs on the radio, and I just keep getting news, people calling me saying, hey, he blasted you on the radio again. I did call to try to talk to him a couple of years ago. He wouldn't talk to me, but his PR man said, I forget. He said, no, he won't talk to you. He won't debate you. He said, well,
why don't you try to call him up right before his radio show starts and just try to get on as a regular caller?
Oh, man. I don't have time. Number one, I don't have time. Number two, I don't care. He can blast me all he wants.
Well,
I'm serving the Lord. He can do what he wants, you know. God, he'll answer to God. And Benny Hinn's going to answer to God, and you're going to answer to God. Everybody's going to answer to God for themselves, and so am I.
Right.
And I'm scared of that day. I don't care what anybody on this planet thinks. I'm scared of what God thinks, and I'm going to try to please him.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Call in any time.
Okay, Kent.
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, folks, you can call in. Our one lonely phone line is now open, 877-479-DINO extension.
136.
136. And, or instant message.
At Dr. Dino Live, D-R-D-I-N-O, or L-I-V-E.
Or email. We don't know yet. Okay. Good. You know, this is a good way to do the radio program, Albert. My wife got me this chair with one of them rollers goes up and down your back. You know, she got this years ago because I've had whiplash 3 times and have constant. I mean, every moment of my life, my back hurts, okay? I've been to the chiropractor 6,000 times. I take a ton of vitamins and minerals, and, you know, I'm still up walking doing good. There's so much scar tissue around T3, T4. Who cares? Nobody. No sense telling people you're hurting because nobody's going to care. You know? And I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm just saying, I'm sitting here at the radio program now. I just moved over to the vibrator chair over by the radio desk, and I'm getting a back massage while I do the program.
You look pretty comfortable.
I am real comfortable.
I know that chair is comfortable. I've spent several hours in it.
Isn't it nice?
Yes.
This seems like $700, you know. My wife saved up her piano money to buy me this thing for, I don't know, Christmas a couple years ago. Who cares? All right, here we go. Marsupial. Oh, I did that one. Okay. Heave23 is back. Writes, hello, I have a question. As you probably know, humans don't use all of their brain capacity. Oh, Heave23, I taught school 15 years. I had students that didn't use 5%. Okay. He goes on to say, I've heard we don't use like 70% of our brain. Was wondering if you think that Adam used the other 70% that we don't. And that's why he was so smart, as you have stated before. I don't know any way to know those kind of things. If we look at, like, they call him idiot savant. Like, what's that guy's name that Jonathan was talking about the other day, that savant that could look at something and multiply giant numbers?
I forgot his name.
Anyway, Jonathan could tell you. They did the movie Rain Man based on this guy. And now they did a new one called Brain Man. Okay? He would just, you'd tell him any two numbers, and he could multiply them in his head, you know, almost instantly. But he didn't know any math. He just knew. He just knew the answer. It just popped into his head. So I don't know. Possibly Adam had all those capacities. Plus, you know, this guy, this brain man, you know, couldn't tie his shoes and didn't know right from left. But Adam probably had all that and could tie his shoes and know right from left. So it would appear to be speculation. But Einstein said he thought people use 10% of their brains. I don't know how he knew that. But that's the number that floats around. And I don't know. I'm sure we don't use it all. There are times, Albert, you ever look down a list of names and there's 400 names and you can pick yours out just like that. Your name's in the list and you just spot your name, you know, if it's in a list. Sure. What if you could read and spot everything on the list all just like that?
That'd be pretty cool.
That's what this guy, this Rain Man, or Brain Man does. He'll read a book and read 2 pages at the same time. One eye's reading one page, the other eye's reading the other page. Takes him 9 seconds to read a page, flips it over, reads the next one. And when he's done, he puts the book away, and a year later you can ask him any questions, and he knows he has memorized the book. He has over 9,000 books memorized. And he can't tie his shoes and doesn't know right from left. Oh, who's on the phone there, Albert?
We have, hold on.
Push all the buttons.
Yeah, Joe from Kent, Ohio.
Joe, Ohio, yes, sir. How's it going on there?
Good. I just thank you for your ministry, and what the last caller had said, I definitely agree. You know them by their fruit, and it's amazing what your ministry does. You're not copywriting for a while and all that sort of thing, and free copying, that's just amazing. We actually started a ministry, our church up here at Kent State University.
Oh, they need it, don't they?
Yes, sir. And the question I have for you is, obviously, we've got a table up in the student center, and we put up a lot of your materials, and then also when we get them to come to the table, we try to use Ray Comfort's materials to go through the law.
Right.
The question, though, I have for you is, we have a hard time, or I am personally, I'm just not good enough. I have a hard time getting them from just debating with me about evolution, trying to get them to switch to the spiritual matter, try to actually, you know, talk to them about the Lord. What's the best way to do that?
Ray Comfort's the best I've ever seen at that. I mean, he's got whole courses on thewayofthemaster.com on how to, you know, switch from the physical to the spiritual. You got to realize you're talking to a person who's spiritually dead. They have no spiritual appetite. You walk up to a dead man and say, hey, you want this hamburger? Here, wave it under his nose. There's no appetite, okay? About the only way in is to get the person to realize their predicament and just using the law and say, okay, here's God's law. Don't lie. Have you ever lied? Yes. You ever stolen? Yes. You ever used God's name in vain? Yes. You ever lusted? Yes. You ever hated somebody? Yes. Okay, now there's 5 of the 10 commandments you already broke.
where we go through those with them, that works really well. Just the problem we're having is some of them approach the table, they just want to argue about creation evolution. So we have your materials and we go through different things with them, but the problem is how do we bridge the gap? How do we get that person then to try to talk about spiritual matters when they're consistently going back and arguing about evolution with us?
Well, that's where in Acts chapter 17, the Apostle Paul on Mars Hill, he said, he didn't quote one scripture to him. He just said, I want to talk to you about the Creator, the unknown God, God that made the world. Paul's approach, Acts 17 approach, you know, is, I think creation's essential. I think it's the foundation of evangelism. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. Can you hang in there?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be right back, folks. Amen. This is Kent Hovind and Awesome Albert back.
January 24th, 06.
And we're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and I'm really liking this back rub machine. This is cool. Do the radio and get a massage same time. And we believe the Bible's true, and the evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. And you're calling from Ohio. Are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and you go to Kent State. Now, how many students go to Kent State?
I believe about 25,000.
I spoke at Ohio State and Ohio University, are the only two I've been at up there to do debates. I'd be glad to come to Kent State. What city is that in?
In Kent.
Okay, what part of Ohio? Northwest?
It's northeastern. It's next to Akron, about half hour south of Cleveland.
Oh, yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, that's what we're eventually trying to do. We're just getting started this past semester and then this semester also working on getting a student group together by using the table and getting... reaching out, getting souls saved, and then if we have a student group there, then we can get the college to authorize us to bring in someone to have a debate like yourself, something like that.
Well, here's what you can do. You don't have to get the college to authorize it, though that'll work sometimes, but it's unlikely that will ever work, okay?
Okay.
Instead, get a, I'm sure they got some Christian organizations on Baptist Student Union or, you know, Campus Life. Or
unfortunately, they don't have anything that I would call Christian left.
Okay, I was just at Northern Michigan University, University of Northern Michigan, I forget. There were three students that got together and formed a club and registered it with the university. And that's all there are is three. And because they have a club, they can get all the benefits of any other club. So they got me up there to speak and do a debate. No, they tried to get a debate. Nobody would do it. But they got a lecture hall for free and, you know, the microphones and the whole setup. I mean, absolutely free. Just three of them.
Wow. Well, that's something we'll look at then, because we actually do have a student group. We have five students, and we have a student group. We just thought that we had to have some kind of backing from the college to actually...
No, not at all. You could start a chess club or a drama club or a creation club or... wouldn't matter.
Well, that sounds...
Wait a minute. I spoke in Cuyahoga Falls. That's right next door to you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's 15 minutes away.
That was years ago. Man, I haven't been up in that area in a coon's age. No.
Yeah, it's just gotten worse, a lot worse.
Yes.
It's pretty dark on campus.
Well, I'll come shine some light if you'd like. Count me in.
Well, that's something we'll be praying about then and start pursuing.
But all you got to do is get a couple students that are, you know, to start a club, give it a name, call it the Creation Club, wouldn't matter. These guys gave theirs a different name. I don't know, the academic something or other. If you call during the day and ask my secretary to get the phone number for the place I was at, I think... it was either the Michigan group or the Wisconsin group. I don't remember. I spoke 2 weeks in a row. Is it two different ones? But that's all it was. It was two or three students. Got together, formed a club. College recognized them, and then bang, they're in.
Were they able to put out posters?
Oh, yeah. Posters, flyers, big banners.
Did you get a big showing and people come out?
1,500 people.
Wow. That'd be great.
I mean, they got advertising in the Student Voice newspaper. You know, it was incredible. Did a good
mostly
job.
Hecklers, probably, but that's...
No, a few. I mean, a couple hundred hecklers, but yeah, I can handle that. No problem. I like it, actually. I love it when the hecklers get, you know... because it doesn't take long to show how dumb their logic is, you know?
Right. Yeah, we've had people go past our table at this point and tell us we should be ashamed of ourselves and things like that. But I'm sure they say a lot worse once you're there.
Well, but see, I know how to handle them, and I guess I'm a little more of the Elijah personality, you know? When somebody mocks, I mock right back, you know? Elijah mocked them. Oh, maybe your God's sleeping, you know. And that's a little more my
right.
Personality. I don't take it. I don't take it laying down, you know.
Yeah, just don't want to offend anybody. Don't want to be a hindrance to the cross.
Well, but. I don't want to be a hindrance, but I don't mind offending them. Sometimes you have to get them.
Right.
You smite the scorner and the simple will beware.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Well, count me in. I'll be glad to come up there. And if you can't get a debate, and you probably won't, they won't do it. Just schedule me to come speak. after you ask all the professors, say, you know, come here, Kent Hovind, speak. The following professors refuse to debate him and list all their names.
If I call back in business hours, talk to the secretary, would you tell me different dates that you might be open in this area or something like that?
Oh, sure, yeah. If it's weekends, I don't know that there's too many of those left this year. She would know. Midweek, I can come up any time. I can come up next week, you know.
Oh, okay.
I'd fly up, do the debate, fly home.
Well, I'll get with my pastor, and we'll make it happen.
Count me in. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. All right, bye-bye. All right, folks, you can call in the 10 minutes we have left, 877-479-DINO, extension 136, or instant message us, and we'll get to it as quick as we can. Heaves 23 is back, says about the 10% of the brain, or 70%. Also, why is it, do you think, we don't use 70% of our brains? Could this maybe be because of human degeneration? Probably. I know they've done some studies, and women who get extra oxygen during pregnancy, the babies are smarter, have a higher IQ. There seems to be a link between people who smoke, which of course cuts down your oxygen supply, and IQs in babies. Now, women who smoke tend to produce, you know, a few points lower IQ babies because it deprives them of oxygen. So that's all I can give on that one. Okay, here we go. Buzz, UK234. Buzz, sorry for keeping you waiting. Got a long list here. You must be up late over there in England. He says, hey, Kent, just wanted to say that your debate with Hugh Ross on the John Ankerberg program was very good. I love the way you told the host to get a proper King James Bible. Awesome. I do have a question. From studying prophecy, from people such as John Hagee on TBN Network, which I know you may comment on about his first and second world idea, I have had, with other studies, a good understanding of the rapture. Jesus will return in the clouds. Those who are Christians will rise and meet him. Then the tribulation happens. The films Left Behind show that Jesus will return again after this time, his second coming, rightly so. However, me and my fiancé were at church to hear that Jesus will only come once and that the tribulation is only a new 19th century idea, which we felt an honest undercomment of this idea is silly. What's your take on Revelation in Scripture? Thanks, Joe, from England. Joe, Albert and I were just discussing during the break about the rapture. He apparently is now getting a different position than some people have. Albert, tell him. Or do you know? Are you still formulating an opinion, or are you settled? Okay. Is your mic on? Oh, your mic's not on. Okay.
That could be a problem.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
All right. Well, I believe in a post-rapture,
post-trib rapture.
Post-trib rapture, which means that the second coming and the rapture are the same thing, and that it's not two separate events.
So the Lord comes back after the tribulation. The few remaining Christians that are alive get raptured out.
Yeah.
But a lot of them get killed.
Yeah.
Most of them get killed.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, that's the post-trib rapture. Okay. There's the at least five positions, mid-trib, post-trib, you know, amillennial, pan-trib. It's all going to pan out in the end, you know. split rapture. I am still pretty strongly pre-trib rapture, but I don't think I could prove why. Okay, I think I could prove pre-wrath rapture. But as far as tribulation, Jesus said, you know, in the world you shall have tribulation. I mean, we're promised that. And tell the Chinese and Russian Christians, oh, we're getting out here before the tribulation. They'll say, yeah, right. We've already had it for 70 years, you know. So, I don't think the pre-trib rapture is a 19th century idea. I wouldn't go along with that. But I would quickly admit that there are good Christians on all sides of this issue. I spoke at Roland Rasmussen's church in Canoga Park, California, Faith Baptist Church. Great church. I've been there like three or four times over the years. And he's a good friend of mine. I think he's got four or five boys, and they all turned out to be pastors and, you know, college administrators and serve the Lord. And his book is over there. It's about post-trib rapture. He strongly believes that. Got a good fundamental Bible-believing church, Baptist church, the best kind. So Christians are genuine, sincere Christians are split on this issue. The entire series of Left Behind by Tim LaHaye was based on the, you know, assumption that it's a pre-trib rapture, which it may be. I don't know. The books are excellent as far as the authorship. I mean, the guy's a brilliant author. You just can't hardly stop reading. You read one, it's like, wow, you know, it sucks you right in. I love those kind of authors. I am not that kind of an author. But That doesn't mean the doctrine's correct, just because the book is well-written, okay? Or the movie is really well-written. That's a wonderful movie. Kurt Cameron's a good friend of mine, but, you know, I don't know that their doctrine is correct. You may be right, Albert. I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to listen to anybody's opinion on that. So far, though, I've remained unconvinced, unconverted to any other view. But like I quickly say, and I've always said, here's what I believe, but I don't think I could prove why. Okay? Here we go. Fight for Jesus Today writes in, I was wondering what you think of downloading music and stealing in biblical sense. I do not think downloading music is breaking the don't steal commandment, and here's why. When you download something, all you are doing is copying data codes into your computer. You are not taking anything away from anyone. Well, yeah, you are. Okay, that's the whole purpose of copyright. That's why we don't. That's why we tell people they can copy our stuff. Okay, in America and in most other countries, there are laws that protect intellectual property. You didn't take their physical property, but you took their intellectual property. They worked hard. They produced a song. They have a right for a certain length of time to have exclusive capital gain or financial gain from their intellectual rights. So I think so far, I'll read the rest of your question, but I think I'd have to disagree. I think if someone has put a copyright on their material and you are copying it, it is taking away their intellect. They have a right to profit. The Bible says the laborer is worthy of his hire, and they labored to produce the music, not you. So if you want to get the benefit, you know, pay the tune. If you want to, how's it go? Pay the piper? I don't know. One of them George Bushisms. Fool me once, fool me. Okay. Yeah, I think it is stealing. You're taking something that belongs to them, and you know they're not getting the profit for it, and they deserve it. Now, whether they should charge that much or not is another story, and if you don't like it, write your own, you know, kind of thing. Let me read the rest of it here. Let's see. All you're doing, you're not taking anything away from anyone. I disagree. It's still on their computer after you download it from them. Well, it's the same thing with the Disney movie. You can make a copy of a Disney movie, and they still have their movie. Can you then make copies of that Disney movie and give it to all your friends so nobody else buys it? Or any movie, for that matter. Okay, he says, let me go on here. Fight for Jesus Today says, a good analogy would be having a magic box. You put a coffee cup in the magic box, close the door, press the button, ding, open the door, and box, and now you have two coffee cups. You did not steal anything. Just did anyone lose something they had before? Well, they didn't lose what they had before, but they lost a potential customer, which is why they do things, so that they can sell them. If you come up with a great idea that's going to make you a millionaire and somebody copies your idea, which happens all the time, you know, Chinese countries don't care about copyrights, it's intellectual theft. Let's see, here we go. It says, all you did was create a copy of, and no one lost anything that they had before you downloaded it. Only reason asking is because my friend told me I should ask what you think about it. Okay, I don't know what your friend thinks, but I think your position is wrong. I think it's their intellectual property, okay? And they have a right to profit from their, not just what they do with their hands, but what they do with their head. In this case, you know, produce music, etc. Okay, Yosarian says, dear Dr. Oven, many evolutionists love this guy named Richard Dawkins. Have you ever tried to debate him? Have you read his books? What does Mr. Dawkins consider good evidence? I have read some of his stuff. I've got a few of his books here. I've tried to debate him, and he won't, period. You know, won't even talk to creationists. So, yeah, I wish he would. So I'll be glad to go over there at my expense, fly all the way to Cambridge and debate the guy. Half my brain tied behind my back. Here we go. Fast Car for Life writes in, since the evolutionists have changed the size they thought the Big Bang was many times, I was wondering if they changed it from nothing to something even stupider, like nothing divided by 10. No, I think so far they've only gotten down to nothing. They used to say the thing that exploded was a few light years in diameter, which is at least, you know, 12 trillion miles. And then it got smaller and smaller. I cover that in video number one. Now that they're down to saying nothing exploded, I don't know that they can go any lower than that, can they?
Antimatter?
Antimatter, yeah. Well, that would be nothing. That would be something.
Minus something.
Yeah. I think they're pretty well hit a brick wall at nothing. I don't think they're going to go much further than that. Okay. We'll get the rest of these questions, and I forgot the ones from yesterday. I have them in my computer, and I apologize. We will start off tomorrow with that. Questions tomorrow. Join us then. Thanks a lot. Bye.